Welcome to MGO Podcast 13.3. It's tough to run out the clock when you score a touchdown every time you run the ball. Well, that was thorough.
I mean, is every team that we faced in the preseason that bad? Like, this was bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, so there was one point in the third quarter where I looked up at the scoreboard and Michigan was 3 of 3 on third down.
Uh-huh.
And they had 63 points. And I was like, I wonder if that's ever happened before, where they have 3 times the number of touchdowns as third downs face.
Attorneys general, yeah.
And probably at some point when they were playing like Iowa pre-flight or something, but
Well, last year I was complaining that, I was trying to contextualize last year that Michigan faced a lot of passing downs, and so their offense didn't really look like it's supposed to because they weren't able to run, right? And this time it was kind of the exact opposite. Like, offense is not supposed to look this good because you're supposed to have third downs, and they didn't have many, and they didn't have any opportunities to get kicked off the field until I think like the third string was on.
Yeah, 6 different quarterbacks played in this game.
Right.
Which if you had asked me how many quarterbacks were on the team, I probably would have said 5.
Uh-huh. I mean, I probably have a better chance of naming a quarterback who, like, transferred from Michigan, all the quarterbacks who, like, were former quarterbacks who are still playing, than all the quarterbacks on our roster right now.
Yeah. So that's what happens when it's 63-10 and you score on your first 9 drives. Speaking of scoring on your first 9 drives, this is not a good segue. The MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products, including hockey jerseys. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com. We would also like to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, Signal Wire, and Prentice 4M, which is where we are right now. So, they start the game off with a quick hitch against the soft coverage to just like activate Cade McNamara, and then sort of the problem with the whole game was as soon as they tried to run the ball, they scored a touchdown.
Right.
Like, there was a point in the third quarter where I'm like, they can't even run out the clock.
Right. or they get the ball in a 2-minute drill at the end of the first half, right?
Well,
and it's like, okay, let's see if Michigan can run a 2-minute drill, and then they just score with Daylon Baldwin real quick.
That was Cornelius Johnson.
Cornelius Johnson.
Analysis of this game is kind of going to be like scanty because it was so bad.
Yeah,
like when we saw this coming, right? So when Alex did the he caught like Georgia Tech running one of these counters, and it looked really bad. It looked like they were going to have a tough time, and they did indeed have a tough time with literally everybody down to the fifth string running back, Franklin.
Leon Franklin.
Leon Franklin.
He's from Southfield, and I think he's going to be a doctor.
Well,
so, like, that guy's going to have – that's going to be someone's doctor one day who's got the story about when he scored a 40-yard touchdown against NIU and they called it back.
Yeah. And I was really mad because I was like, that was going to be, like, my – column lead in is Leon Franklin. Like, was that more disrespectful a touchdown than the fullback trap against Rutgers? I think it was not quite as disrespectful as the fullback trap. But this is the kind of game we're talking about. We're talking about that Rutgers game.
Yes.
The Delaware State game. Like, in the annals of all time, nothing.
The moment I realized that I'm not going to get really much out of this, especially the running game, is when Luke Schoonmaker erased a cornerback, like put him into the sideline, put him 5 yards into the sideline, and then was still blocking him upfield. And I'm like, well, I've seen him block guys, and I've seen how it normally goes. He's not bad, but it's like, you know, he normally blocks a guy, and the guy gives him some sort of token resistance.
He doesn't pull the, who is that?
Spam. Spinellis, yeah.
Spinellis against Notre Dame.
Right.
So, I mean, takeaways are we were slightly worried about the idea that Michigan's run game would start being less consistent because people would not identify their blocks correctly.
Uh-huh.
That didn't happen. So, particularly, like, you know, they're running all these wraparound blocks, and even when guys are putting their noses in places that aren't expected, Michigan offensive linemen are stopping, adjusting, and cutting those guys off. This was evident on the long Edwards touchdown.
Yeah.
Is that a guy was trying to shoot a gap inside, and that is a tough adjustment for an offensive lineman to make. And I forget who it was. I think it was Keegan stopped, found the guy, and then there was a kickout block, and then the safety could not get over fast enough to do anything with Edwards. And that just feels like kind of the story of the offensive line through these three games, is that when you go and you look at the tape, the kind of mistakes that you see every offensive line make, especially early in a season, especially with some new starters, they're really rare.
Yeah.
So, you know, my preseason concerns about Sherrone Moore seem to be... invalid.
I again, Wile E. Coyote year, so we're not sure, you know, we can't really discount Ed Warner's effect on this line, but I think what's interesting this year, and I'm waiting for UFR, this is the base, I'm trying to find things to look for in UFR other than, like, Ryan Hayes just, you know, dismantles a person. But one of them is that I think they're a lot more diverse in the kinds of power they run. So, like, last year they were running counter, and they were running pin and pull, and then, like, they would go back to their arc read game and stuff, right? And the year before, it was the same thing. So they had, like, very simple things that they were good at, and they could run them against a lot of different looks. Now, they're running pure power. They're running pure counter. There's a little bit of down G in there. Like, they're varying not only where they're attacking, but, like, sort of how they, you know, they, it's still the same four blocks, but they vary how everybody does it based off the alignment.
Well, they're also running stretch.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of something that there are three main things you can do in a run game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can run inside zone, you can run outside zone, and you can gap block stuff. Those are like the three things. And I've talked with some people about this, and there's some disagreement in the, like, OL coach community about this stuff. But, like, my theory I put forward is you can't do all of those.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, it's just, you're not going to have the offensive lineman, you're not going to have the time to teach it all. You can't do all of those well.
Especially in college.
Yeah, until you get to the NFL level. And then sort of the corollary to that was that inside zone is always one of the things that you do.
Yeah.
Because
it's...
Because if you are an outside zone team, you need inside zone. And if you're a gap block power team, inside zone is a lot easier to run, and also variants like duo and stuff, because you want to go forward and you have the offensive lineman to go forward.
Right.
And this appears to be an offense that does a lot of gap block power stuff and then has outside zone, and they're not really running inside zone.
They only do at split zone. They run a lot of split zone, and that's their inside zone play.
Yeah.
But split zone is still a little bit different, because you're looking for that backside. You're still kicking somebody out. There's still a gap that's being blocked. And then if the gap's not there, then you go to zone. But yeah, your point stands. Like, if split zone is your base zone play, and then everything else is power and stretch, like, you're a very diverse offense.
And the way they're running the split zone is it's really focusing on the split block.
Yeah.
Because you can run these zone plays in a lot of different ways. We mentioned duo. So they're, like, really trying to power people off the line and then have that cutback.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, it doesn't feel like the front side gaps are prioritized, and if they happen to pop up, then they happen to pop up. But it feels like the goal of that is very much the split cutback.
Yeah, because I think it's because they're using it as their counter to, like, the pin and pull and, like, power stuff they do on the front side. So you got those linebackers terrified every time they see a guard stand up, and then the guard just blocks a tackle, and, like, they kick that backside. But they also have the arc still in the – I mean, they don't – the quarterback doesn't read it right all the time, but it's definitely there. Like, he's definitely supposed to be making a read, because they're not blocking that guy all the time, or they're blocking him with the, you know, with the split zone, and then the tight end is kind of reading that guy and deciding what to do with him. So they're looking to, like, break a big play on the backside, or looking to break a big play on the front side, and then basically burrowing in the middle is, like, the last resort for them.
Yeah, and then you have plays where it kind of looks jammed up, and then because Blake Corum in particular, like, he had, I think, 3 or 4 rushes in this game where I was like, God damn. Because he's like, someone's grabbing his leg and he goes down, he puts his hand down, that's no problem, he just pops back up because he's a weeble wobble like Mike Hart used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to hop over a gap, and he's just like, and the vision to be able to do that is uncanny. And
and he had another run in this one where like 2 guys took a bad pursuit angle, which looked like good pursuit angles until he turned on the jets,
right? And you know, he gets the ball, and you're just like, is this the 60-yard touchdown? No, but that was still pretty good. Is this a 60-yard touchdown? No, but that was rad. Is this the 60? Yes, this one's it. This is it. And then, I mean, Haskins, of course, is doing well, and we saw Donovan Edwards flash the same kind of level of speed that Corum has
mm-hmm.
on his touchdown, which was also just like, goddamn, bro. So, yeah, like, this... this looks like it's going pretty well and should continue going this well. And I think beyond reasonable expectations from the preseason. Because, you know, I've been super hype on Corum ever since I did his recruiting profile. Mm-hmm. But I did not
think not going to, like, hey, this kid that we haven't seen play is a Heisman candidate?
Not yet. But, like, we keep having all these jokes about Mike Hart but fast. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of like... Yeah, he'll be some sort of B-level facsimile of Mike Hart, and then he'll be fast. And 3 games into this season, I just feel like, no, he's exactly that.
Mm.
And so that's above the expectation. Like, I don't think anyone thought the OL would be able to like do this because, you know, people screw up. You know, you're watching really good offensive lines in the Alabama-Florida game, and there are defensive linemen just getting teleported right into the backfield because someone messed up.
Right.
And we haven't seen that yet. And we haven't played Florida, Alabama yet. But, like, those are mental mistakes that real good teams are making that seem to be almost absent in a way that... And I'm beginning to think I was the problem.
Fair enough.
Like, as soon as I stopped doing this, it got way less annoying. So that's my hope for the rest. Is like, it was me all along.
Okay.
And I was like...
So 2007, you start charting Michigan,
right.
And they're like, well, we're not going to show Brian anything.
Well, I don't know, but I feel like King Midas, except instead of a crown, I have like a poop emoji on my head.
Right.
And now I'm no longer touching the thing I shouldn't have been touching. And maybe that will pave the way for future football glories.
Or it might just be Ryan Hayes is incredible because he's agile as a tight end and just moves people so far, and Keegan like is making the right reads. Like, that was the guy that you mentioned.
But that's what I'm saying.
But like, well, we saw people do these things before. We had a Luan and a Long.
I charted like 5 years of Kyle Kalis.
But like, Kalis was not good at identifying his blocks.
That's what I'm saying.
Right, but like, we would have guys who were, and then like there would be 2 guys on the line who were not.
This is what I'm saying.
And now we have 5 guys who seem to know what they're... 6 guys, because Filianga gets in there and he knows what he's doing too.
Well, in any case, well above preseason expectations. And then the passing game...
We did it 15 minutes before we talked about the passing
well,
game.
Well, I mean, that's good, right? That's I think, appropriate perspective.
No, I just walked in wondering, like, is it going to be 15 minutes before we actually mention the passing game or not?
And, well, so the passing game... is present in this one.
Yeah,
I think you can call it that. You get the 87-yard throw is a headliner, but they also took like 2 or 3 more shots. Cornelius Johnson had a shot at one in the end zone that was contested that I thought he could have done a little better with. And they took a shot at Baldwin too, right?
Yeah. So there was one in the end zone to Cornelius Johnson that people were complaining about pass interference, but I thought McNamara needed to put it more into the middle. He put it right on the hash mark, and the safety was dead, so you could just put it over there and then you have room to maneuver. And he had to slow up and let the cornerback get back to him, and then it was contested.
I mean, I can see that, but I also can see, like, you know, just give your guy a chance.
Uh-huh.
Especially a guy like Cornelius Johnson, who's sort of in that Nico Collins mold of like pogo stick guys who just have big frames. So not an ideal throw, but you know, if you're that far down and your guy can get a hand on it or 2 hands on it, then I feel like...
And then he overthrew Cornelius Johnson just by like a step. At that point, you're accurate enough.
Yeah. I mean, if you hit one of the two,
right,
which he did,
right.
And so we add that to a couple of deep shots to Bell
mm-hmm.
in the first game, and his deep accuracy. We don't have a ton of information on it, but the frequency with which they go after it and the throws we've seen so far are pretty encouraging.
Yeah.
And of course, right now I'm thinking about that Alabama bowl game where Patterson just like couldn't hit anybody. Like, and when you have this kind of ground game,
mm-hmm.
those deep shots either are going to back some safeties off or they're going to be there.
Yeah.
So I think maybe you don't need to have like a whiz bang Drew Brees, Tom Brady thing going where you're running levels over the middle of the field and you're picking out the exact right gap in the zone and threading the needle. If you can just be like, all right, the safeties are up. I have Cornelius Johnson, who's going to run a double move on this guy and leave him in San Francisco. Maybe that's all I need to do.
Do you think Daylon Baldwin affected things too? Because we learned that he was out for the Washington game with an ankle. And like the first pass that hitch to him just felt like so natural. And I don't think he has that same trust in, like, say, Roman Wilson.
I don't know. I mean, his ability to break that tackle and make it into something other than 5 yards was good. And Wilson,
he's fast. He does not he's not technical.
He doesn't
yet.
Have that size, right? Like
yeah.
both Baldwin and Johnson are guys who like are 6'2", can go get it. And Wilson is more of a, I guess, a Roy Roundtree kind of shaped guy,
sure.
where he's not going to overwhelm you physically, but he's fast. So I don't know. I'd like to see more from Baldwin. It's hard because, like, okay, he's the number 2-ish receiver now,
uh-huh.
and Michigan is throwing the ball X number
11
of times
per game. Did you see there was a graphic at the beginning of this game, and I doubt it's changed, that the only three teams who've thrown the ball less than Michigan are Army, Navy,
and
Air Force, Navy. Yeah.
Maybe. And then one guy in the wide receiver core who didn't really get a lot of opportunities as a receiver but was much more involved in terms of touches was A.J. Henning.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that end around
yeah.
that they like that they ran a couple of times against the opener. Who was the opener?
Western Michigan. Who beat Pitt.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, I think, with Jamie. And then they had an out-and-out reverse that went to him as well. And one of the things that really struck me in this game on Henning's run, and Corum's too, is that so many of them, everybody was like, all right. And then I was like, oh, because someone like would get a shoestring tackle in.
Yeah, they did that on Roman Wilson's run too.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other thing is that like at first you're like, okay, is this going to happen? And then all of a sudden he's got that acceleration.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes very quickly from – oh, no, could that safety get him to – that safety doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, so he's another guy that if they can scheme him opportunities to get loose, that's going to be really productive. We didn't see any wide receiver screens in this game, I don't think. We saw Washington really overplay those.
Yeah.
So I think those are going to be minimized for a while. And then when they come back to him, maybe you're going to see some double moves off that stuff, which I always think is a – something that you should definitely incorporate into your short games.
Especially if you're doing it with Corum, because that guy puts a double move on and then he's a linebacker versus him on a wheel route. Like, yeah. Wee!
Yeah, so I can find nothing to like complain about in any way whatsoever.
You're going to lose your Michigan fandom if you can't do that. We are the best in the world at this. With the leaders and the best at griping.
But, like, what is there to, like, gripe about?
There's nothing. The tight ends were great blockers in this game. Sainer still had a couple great blocks. I mean, there was no X's and O's to it because, like, they just were paving them. So they didn't have to get to a third down where they even, like, worried about it. I did notice when McCarthy came in, they didn't give him Henning to throw at. They're like, you have to throw at somebody else now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, was there any McCarthy stuff that stuck out to you?
He had a couple of throws that were just like, okay, yeah, that arm's on a different level
mm-hmm.
than McNamara's. Now, McNamara did hit that seam to all over the middle on second and 18.
Yeah.
So that was encouraging because we haven't seen him – really operate in that kind of intermediate zone yet.
Yeah, but the ball, that was a great throw, and it's still, I mean, it got exactly where all needed to be, and that's what McNamara's got to be. When JJ's throwing it, that ball looks just so different. Like, I think he threw one hitch route, and that got out there so fast that I think Roman Wilson had to, like, jump up and collect it. And the difference between the speed in which the football gets out to, like, Dalen Baldwin in the first play versus that Roman Wilson throw is noticeable.
Yeah, so a complete and total paving that is so comprehensive it's almost hard to find out what to talk about.
And yet we managed 20 minutes of offense to kind of giggle at each other.
Yay. Let's take a break, come back, and talk about the other side of the ball. Spoiler alert, won't be that much different.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan, we're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Dreams, crazy as they may seem, go chase all the stars in the sky. Maybe I'll be paving the runway, 'cause I know that one day you're gonna fly.
Northern Illinois goes on their first drive, and they march down the field, and they get a 4th and 2 from the 3, and they gave up 50 points to Wyoming.
Yeah.
The week before, and they're like, you know what? the doctor ordered for this? A field goal. And I feel like that's just telling your team that you're not even trying to win. But this is, that's for a different segment. This segment is about, we talked about how they, Northern Illinois might hit a big play or two, but they weren't going to sustain a drive. And they come out and they sustain a drive on their first.
Second drive. Their second drive.
Second, their first one was a 3-and-out. That's right. And you're like, oh, I don't know about this. And then nothing happens basically the rest of the game until the deep, deep backups are in.
Right.
Like Lombardi's stuck on 18 passing yards most of the day. Looks a lot like the Rocky Lombardi everybody else got to see last year. Where it's like, oh, I'm going to throw an out now. Nope. I'm going to throw a hitch now. Nope.
I was surprised they didn't at least try to, like, you know,
hit us downfield.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe they didn't have any faith in their pass blocking or something. But yeah, the thing that it seems like you would try to do after watching what happened in a Rocky Lombardi game last year would be to do that.
And right.
I don't know if they took like a shot at a fly route. I can't.
I'm not thinking of one at all. No. They were, everything they tried to pass was short. They were really just trying to break their running back loose with speed plays. And I thought that one drive, the extended drive, was well scripted. It reminded me of the D'Antonio drive in 2016. Because he was doing this, a very similar thing where he was motioning a guy over to the other side and then pulling a lot of guys over there too to kind of change up everybody's jobs. As the play progressed. And what it ended up doing a couple times was getting the defensive tackle as the edge defender, and like Jenkins was not ready to be an edge defender. And as soon as they cleaned that up, I thought that was done.
Yeah, and I was thinking on that drive that they had a lot of tricks up their sleeve for the run game, and that's probably what they had focused on all offseason, is just like to have these like sort of tendency breaking slash...
It was a speed and space stuff. It was like the, it was similar to like how we want to stretch one guy's moving one way and then get the ball going the other way.
They'd line up in twin tight ends and then flip them and then flip their entire line, which everybody always hates.
Oh, that fourth down thing, the fourth and one sequence. Do you remember that?
Remind me.
Okay, so I think it was near the end of the half and they're on fourth and one and they come out and then they shift. And then they shift again. And then they move a guy across.
Oh,
and then they shift again.
Right.
And then like they call a timeout. And we're like, okay, now they're going to punt. And then they just come out and run a fullback dive and get the first down. But it was very, we're playing Jim Harbaugh, and we've been watching some Jim Harbaugh tape kind of thing that they prepared.
Yeah, and then after that, they just kind of get shut off. And they like we see a lot of rotation on the defensive line again. So Whitley gives Michigan probably 15 snaps that are worthwhile.
It's doubled every single one of them. I noticed that.
And you mentioned Whitley. You mentioned with Jenkins, who probably is a year away still, but he's getting out there and playing. You saw Jeter. You saw, of course, the two starters. And you saw Mike Morris, and he's playing that stand-up end too, but he's more of a DT in my mind.
Yeah, I think that he's the guy that they put out there when they want to be able to be versatile. So like they can line him up as a kind of an anchor, or they can go all the way out to offensive linebacker or outside linebacker.
So who knows if any of this is going to stand up against like a Wisconsin or a Penn State? But
I mean, Whitley
so far,
seems like he's going to do what he's going to do. It's just how many snaps can he do it for?
Not many,
right?
I'm gonna come out and say that right now. Jordan Whitley is not going to get a lot of snaps.
But you're going to get those 15 snaps as long as you can get them. Like I think Morris could probably stand up against that line. Hutchinson just changes everything because that side, whatever side Hutchinson is on, you either have to put three blockers on him or it's over.
Right. And then in a linebacker level, they were firing down the first play. Josh Ross activates, gets a hit at the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
We saw Hill Green have a couple of those, too.
He had one great tackle where he just accelerated into the backfield.
And just went splat on the guy. So, you know, when the opposition is so limited in their passing game, it makes that kind of stuff easier.
Yeah, I feel like the linebackers are going to come in for a high score again that I'm not going to trust just because, like, the reads are so simple for them. The only thing I think they screwed up, and maybe this goes back to the outside linebacker, the defensive ends really, was the big Lombardi run and one of the runs on the scripted drive were both arc reads where like Michigan had never seen a quarterback keeper in their life.
Right.
Which is understandable if they're practicing against our offense.
Well, there's one. We had one.
Yeah.
And when the passing game is so limited, it's really hard to draw many conclusions about the secondary. We had a nice pass breakup from Dax Hill mm-hmm. on their first drive, and that was their receiver who's like their one receiver, so it's good to see that. I mean, I don't know how involved the other guys were except like watching Lombardi fail to complete short passes.
Well, they were jumping routes. I don't remember last time Michigan, because we've been a man team for so long, you don't really get a lot of those opportunities, but Michigan started vamping, and I think Hawkins did it a couple times, vamping off their zones. I don't know if that's the right word, but like when you're in your zone, but you can kind of guess where the play is going and leave your zone to try to get a pick. And I think I saw Hawkins do it once. I think I saw Moten try to do it once. And that's going to result in some – they did get one pick, but that was just off a deflection. But I thought Hawkins actually deserved one, and that's kind of interesting to see. And then did you see what the their coach said about Michigan's – or was it Rocky Lombardi said about their defense afterwards?
Didn't see it.
Okay, so he's like – the coach just teased us. He goes, these guys are built to beat Ohio State, which no, we're not. We're not going there yet. But Rocky said that like it's a night and day from last year where the looks they're giving you are so difficult to figure out where to go. And last year, he knew exactly what Michigan was going to run. It was just a question of could they beat you. And, you know, Lombardi had to prepare against this defense twice and was, I mean, for him to say that, I think, says something. Usually, even the former Spartans don't really want to say anything nice about Michigan. So I thought that was very noticeable that it's in the quarterback's heads. And that was the design. That was the point of bringing in McDonald, was to make those reads difficult instead of just, you know, do we have the horses to beat you?
Yep. And didn't really get a whole lot of other data because it was just so restricted for most of the day. And they like it was a Mac offense that came in and was like, there's only a certain limited amount of stuff that we're even going to try to do.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to get our quarterback annihilated in this game. And I think once they fell down like 21-3, they were like, all right. Any kind of special stuff they had up their sleeve, any kind of like risk that they wanted to take to like maybe make this a game was just like going to be out the window because they're like, no, our defense isn't going to do anything against these guys, so we're just gonna vanilla it up and down the field and get out of here.
Yep, and they did that.
Yep. All right, we'll take a break, come back, talk some game theory, special teams, that kind of thing.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. And now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer. Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease. A take so raw it could be Rocky Lombardi's acumen throwing 5-yard hitches. Death, give me your raw take.
Blake Corum is a Heisman candidate
this year.
Well, we're trying to get him touchdowns.
Are we?
I mean, he was still in there, like, coming in on 4th and 3 to, like, you know, squirrel his way in to get to the touchdowns when, like, it was well into the time when you could be putting out, who knows,
yeah,
number 40, number 42, all those guys. And we were still putting Corum out there. And, like, they're talking about Zach Charbonnet as a Heisman candidate.
Probably not after UCLA lost to Fresno State.
No, but, I mean, if that is what a Heisman candidate is, then the guy that he left because he wasn't going to get any carries, like, should be in the list at least. Right. I mean, I love Hassan Haskins, and Corum has taken a huge step beyond Haskins. He is the star of the best offense in the Big Ten this year so far.
No, you can't just say that.
And so far, I mean, anybody else, like, just lighting it up? I mean, Ohio State can throw to its two receivers sometimes. So at this point in the year, I mean, I'm talking about the level where Denard was a Heisman candidate after the Notre Dame game.
All right.
All right? I think he's there. We got a long way to go but I think he should be on the consideration. And Michigan's getting him touchdowns, tells you that he's, you know.
My raw take is the SEC should not employ CFL referees.
100% disagree with you on this.
So if you miss this, Penn State was forced to punt on 3rd down because there was a roughing the passer penalty, and the SEC refs were like, "I guess that's loss of down," and they're like, "I guess that's loss of 2 downs." So poor James Franklin's on the sideline going like, "Can you guys count to 4?" And they were like, "No, we cannot." And then there was the thing in the Memphis game. There was a punt that Arkansas, I don't remember who.
I didn't watch this game. This is my drive home.
They'd like downed the punt, and then they left it alone, and the Memphis guy came in and grabbed it and ran for a touchdown. Because you can do that.
Yeah.
if nobody's trying to pick up the ball, they blow it dead. But he was trying to pick up the ball. And one of their refs had like was in the process of blowing the play dead when the guy picked the ball up.
This is an intent to blow whistle or
so
something?
So he should not have done that.
Right.
But since he did that, the play shouldn't have been allowed to continue. And also, Memphis had two guys wearing five on the field at the same time.
Oh.
So that should have been called back too.
Yeah.
Because...
Because that's a real call that you should do that.
And that's
but
like that's like
at the end of a game when 105 players have played, you should have a little bit of like a warning for that, maybe.
No, I'm just like that is so Canadian, like not getting it right, and then telling people about it. That's very like upfront and very Canadian. So get rid of the CFL refs.
Yeah,
it's not working.
See, I disagree because giving Penn State bad officiating makes for the best Twitter.
Well, they won that game, so they can't even be that mad.
Well, no, but they're mostly mad during the game. I mean, they were mad.
Tell me about the Raw Power app for iOS.
Oh, I thought you were going to read it.
No, I'm not. You are.
All right. Well, if I have to read it, if you would like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, check out the Raw Power app for iOS and Mac. It's an advanced photo editor and manager, and Raw Power is written by a Michigan alum. It's great with RAWs and JPEGs, works with your Apple library, and adds rating and editing features no other app has. Check it out at rawpower.app.
All right. I got into this a little bit in the previous segment, but what are you doing? You're down 7-0.
You got a fourth and two
from the three.
Yeah.
You gave up 50 points to Wyoming, and you're like, you know what time it is, boys? Field goal time.
I could not believe. The fans were booing. Like, Michigan fans were like, What are you doing? It was disrespectful. What? You're in Michigan State. Do you think we're not going to score 3 points? We've already, like, just, come on.
I mean,
and this was a scripted drive. This is like the drive that they planned all offseason.
Nah, they didn't spend that on us.
It was a good. It was a well scripted drive.
And I don't know. You just how do you walk up to your team, your players after that, and be like, "Yeah, we're
on the board.
We're on the board.
At least they got a touchdown later, so that wasn't the only points. Because I would have definitely said that that is the saddest. 7-3 field goal I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. There were no other game theory moments of import because Michigan, again, barely got to face third downs, let alone fourth downs.
Oh, yeah, there were certain things that, in the context of what they were, like Michigan had their punt block practice out there at one point and ended up getting a... I did not think that was a good call, by the way. I didn't think he would. He tried to, like...
The roughing the kicker call?
The roughing the kicker call.
He did... I mean, he touched the plant foot, and that's just always going to be the 15-yard version of it.
Right. But anyway, Michigan did try to block, and I thought that was more interesting, that they're practicing how they're going to do it.
They went after it a couple of times, but for the most part, I thought they actually tried to set up returns, and that led to an interesting thing where A.J. Henning was the new punt returner, let a couple of them bounce, so you can kind of understand why they were hesitant to put him out there.
But, yeah, I went and got my insider information on this one. Basically, what happened was Kolasar was like, a cool customer, and they knew that they were coming up to a game under the lights, and they didn't want to kind of throw Henning out there the first time and have something go off his helmet, and that happen. So they were saving him for this game all along. This is the plan, apparently.
Well, he got his opportunity and looked like the dynamic playmaker he's looked like on the end-arounds and reverses that he's gotten, and he's clearly a very good choice to do this, and he almost broke, too. There were a couple of punt returns, like I mentioned before, in the offense segment where it's like, oh, here we go, and then it's like, oh.
Yeah.
That was the last guy.
Yeah.
And he got him by a shoestring. So, yeah. Obviously, that's the guy you want to have at that position going forward. Hopefully, he'll be able to do a little bit better job of catching him.
I think, like, as he gets settled in, it's going to be easier. It is a, and this was stressed to me, a very hard job. And
how hard a job can it be? Two of the three students have caught all three of the punts.
I think maybe different when people are all bearing down on you.
No, those guys can do it. They're like, you know, biology majors.
And those punts all are going within a certain, like, they're trying to make it like, you know, the real punters are trying to punt it away from the punt returner. That's just trying to, like, give the fans something to see.
No, I'm
those punts are going 35 feet.
Maybe this
yards
is my raw
field.
Take. If you can't catch the punt, we're going to get some kid from the student section. We're going to put a helmet on him, no pads, just a helmet, and he's going to go out there and he's going to do it.
We're going to get an army of coaches who are like jumping to my defense on this one.
Well, that'll definitely be time well spent by those coaches. So congratulations in advance on your advanced time management skills, legion of coaches that Seth believes will rush to his defense. Like the British at Gallipoli. Gallipoli? How do you pronounce it?
Gallipoli.
Gallipoli?
Yeah.
I don't even know what's going on anymore. shout out to Brad Robbins because he didn't play.
It was a very nice day for him. It was a field goal attempt that we skipped with the backups on a fourth and long. Yeah, so it wasn't even an opportunity to punt.
No. So
were we in a third down in our own territory all game?
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, Brad Robbins, good job out there. It's often difficult to not screw it up when you don't have to do anything. Take it from a person who knows. And the kickoff, everybody was booing because they were fair catching them. Which
at like the 23, we're like, please, just try it. Just try it for 2 yards.
Like when NIU was fair catching.
Yeah, no, I'm saying NIU fair caught it at like the 20 at one point. Oh, yeah. And they were kicking it off to like our sub guys. They weren't even
trying
to.
They were just popping it up.
Yeah.
Which, makes sense, you know. We don't have that guy who plays for, I don't even know what team that was, Presbyterian or something?
Yeah.
Who was just like, instead of getting yards, what I'm going to do is I'm going to stiff arm everybody into the ground. Like, he has wanted to do that since he was like 6 years old. And everybody else is, I caught the winning pass in the Super Bowl. Like, no, I stiff arm some guy's head off. Going to be in a Lucha Underground pretty soon.
Sure. Andrell Anthony returned. He was the backup punter this game.
Returner.
Yeah. Backup punt returner. I think that was all I really had. Going for it every fourth down was correct. Like, Michigan was just not paying any attention to the concept of having any resistance to their offense.
Well, and this is when, like, the, you know, walk-ons were in and stuff. So, like, whatever. Let them play.
That was half. Half of the game was the walk-ons in there. They put McCarthy in at the beginning of the second half.
Yeah, and then it took up most of the third quarter. Like, after the Edwards touchdown, they were like, all right.
It did bother me that we got to, like, I think we were at 56 points, and I go, I bet we're going to hit 70, because we had, like, most of the third quarter left at this point.
Yeah.
And then we didn't get to 70. We did not.
No.
Backups, this is your opportunity.
Well.
Anyway, we've kind of run out of things to talk about.
We clearly have. So let's take a break and talk to Jamie.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Prentice 4M. They just took over Lucky's and put a survey on our message board recently that you can take if you're interested in helping them shape what they're going to do with the space. I recommend you do that and tell them all the things I want them to do. We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm going to apply for Kerry Combs' job this week, I think, so wish me luck.
Let's start with...
I mean, sorry, I live in Ohio, so that's all people are talking about this morning.
Right. So let's start with the outstanding result of the week, which was Penn State beating Auburn 28-20 in a game that we already have brought up in the hot take segment, because we kind of think that the SEC should not employ CFL referees.
Some of us think that. Oh, other people think that they should use it against Penn State every single week just for the Twitter fun.
So Auburn was not favored in this game, which was actually in State College. So this is a game between a Big Ten team and an SEC team that happened north of the Mason-Dixon line and was it at a stupid neutral site.
In whiteout conditions, which is the one thing that the SEC wants to avoid.
I think Penn State's going down to Auburn next fall. So this is a traditional home and home, something I know both of you guys have called for on the blog.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of thing the SEC usually doesn't allow. But I think that they figured Auburn could take care of business.
Is that something that you just look at Auburn and you're like, yeah, they're going to take care of business?
Yeah.
They
sort of have a lethargic road history the last 4 or 5 years. So I don't know why anybody would think they could take care of business.
Also, they're just the weirdest football program in America. So when I look at Auburn, I'm not like, they've got this. And I look at Auburn, I'm like, anything could happen here. A chicken could come out of the head coach's face and it could score a touchdown, or it could throw 16 interceptions, or they could call a goal line fade with Bo Nix, who has all the touch of a hammer.
That was a let's put it on the CFL refs play, wasn't it? Am I wrong about that? They were like, okay, we're going to get a flag if we do this.
I mean,
I could not think of any other reason in the world to do that.
Nobody actually throws those flags. Yeah. I want to shout out Tank Bigsby for being the most Auburn running back name ever. I can't imagine. Right.
Beyond Cadillac Williams.
Cadillac Williams. I mean, Tank and then Bigsby is like Cadillac. Yeah. Cadillac's pretty good. Williams doesn't really do much for me. And then the headline from this game was Sean Clifford going 28 for 32
against a bona fide SEC defense, getting almost 10 yards an attempt.
Yeah.
So the ground game for Penn State was fairly moribund, but he was able to carry them through the air. And when we were talking about Penn State in the preseason, we were like, Sean Clifford is a problem for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they broke the last two guys who got to their third year, and he looked like he was well on his way.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I figured this would be a game where, like, whoever got the least worst quarterbacking play would win. And that obviously happened because Nix was worse than Clifford. But, you know, Clifford actually kind of was the number one star of the game. And I didn't expect that. Easily a career game. And he threw it to a lot of guys. I mean, Jahan Dotson had 10 catches, but Parker Washington also had 8. And then 5 other guys got a catch. So it was very, very balanced. But it wasn't, you know, one of those when like 7 or 8 guys get a catch, it's like maybe 3 or 4 running backs. It was all wideouts or tight ends. So I thought that was pretty good too for him.
Yeah, all wideouts or tight ends. So they're stretching the field. They're getting downfield. Auburn has no sacks in this game.
Wow.
So that's wow. Like,
I mean, against Penn State's defensive front, I mean, I thought that was going to be a problem last night for them. Or offensive front rather.
Yeah.
Because, you know, going back to the Wisconsin game 2 weeks ago, I mean, they couldn't block those guys. And now here's a legitimate SEC front seven. And they couldn't in the run game, but the pass protection was great.
So this is setting up Iowa and Penn State be like as a top 10 matchup. Like,
yeah.
Easily.
I mean, well,
we're going to subject the whole country to this.
Yeah. That's going to be like the headline game of I think, 2 weeks from now.
Isn't it always like 3-2 every time those teams play?
I think 6-4 was the famous.
6-4.
Yeah.
That right. That 6-4 game was in the news last week because Iowa almost had a lower total yardage output against Iowa State than they did in that 6-4 win. But I mean, I trust Parker as a defensive coordinator to maybe make sure that Sean Clifford, you know, doesn't go 28-32. But I don't expect that the game to be any prettier than that 6-4 game almost a generation ago.
No, it is worth mentioning that Penn State. We've heard them for years talk about how the refs have screwed them. Mm-hmm. And they really did in this game.
Oh, yeah.
There was intentional grounding that was completely ridiculous. There was a couple of other flags that were like everybody on Twitter was like, I don't know how you make that call, including like SEC partisans.
Right. And there was an addendum to that bad intentional grounding call. They forgot that Penn State still had another down, and Penn State ended up punting on third down.
Yeah. That,
and I kind of blame the Penn State coaching staff a little bit for not like figuring that out as well, but that's still mostly on the refs.
No, like Franklin like said that he talked to every one of the referees and they said that was right. So like he noticed this wasn't Frames Janklin doing Frames Janklin things. It was just like he was talking to these guys and they were a brick wall.
Wow. What a masterpiece by the Zebras last night. Wow. I mean,
what can you do? All right, moving on to Michigan State, Miami. This ends up 38-17. Michigan State has a 10-point lead for much of the fourth quarter. And they just kind of maul it. And, like, you really – I don't know where this is coming from.
It's Kenneth Walker. So, like, they would deliver him to, like, unblocked guys, and then he would make them miss or run through them.
They could have had Jesus himself the past, like, 8 years, and they would have gotten 3 yards a carry. Like, that offensive line has been a wreck forever.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the thing that their offensive line has going for them now is that, one, they didn't come into the season with a bunch of injuries or surprise transfers in the offseason. It seemed like every year for the last 4 years or so, the storyline on that offensive front is like 7 games in, 5 different starting combos. And last year they had, I think, 4-for-4 in their first 4 games. And they've had the same guys out there, I believe. And I feel like the transfer that came in from the Sun Belt, Horst, kind of moving out the tackle, put Reed on the inside where he's supposed to be, or Jarvis rather, where he's supposed to be. And it sort of works, but I'm a little bit with Seth. I think Kenneth Walker is actually the straw that's stirring this drink. His cutback ability is amazing. And I mean, that's going to be a big test for Big Ten defenses this fall. Yesterday was a perfect storm with his cutback ability and Miami's typically poor tackling. And you could see, I could see his big day coming a mile away yesterday. So
Miami might just be bad.
Yeah. Like, well, they're
And they just have this kind of you know, they played Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and when teams play Alabama early in the season, they tend to fall flat on their face afterwards because they just get so beat up. And, you know, they play Appalachian State last week. Which, they win by two. And Appalachian State's a good team, but, of course, they are a Group of Six team. So they might not be very good. And De'Aaron King in this game threw 60 times.
Wow. Oof. Well, they've been relying on him way too much here in these first three games, especially since he's coming off an ACL.
Yeah, and 12 of their rushing attempts were from him, and like half of those were sacks. So they gave their running back the ball 11 times versus 60 passes. And I'm guessing that King was not tasked with running the ball on purpose much. So you're talking about like 72 dropbacks versus 11 runs.
Wow.
That's
much of a game plan.
Yeah. That means that your team is broken. That you can't have that lack of balance.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of feel that. I know this is a Big Ten podcast, but hey, the ACC is part of the alliance, I think. So let's go with Miami here. They are basically a more talented version of Nebraska. I mean, they make so many mistakes throughout the course of the game, and they also just never seem to be functional. And you just broke their play breakdown. You know, kind of illustrates that. But as far as the mistakes, they committed 10 penalties yesterday. They were -4 in the turnover margin, and two of the turnovers were critical. And then they had this stretch where they dropped a wide open touchdown pass, and then on the next play, missed a 27-yard field goal. And that touchdown would have put them up 14-3 in the middle of the second quarter. Michigan State took that possession. Walker had 56 total yards. Naylor had a big play, and they took the lead on a touch, you know, scored a touchdown and took the lead. But if it's 14-3, if that tight end holds on to the wide open touchdown, this game could be totally different. But Miami makes so many mistakes that was predictable in a way.
Yeah. The final piece of good news for the conference this week was Minnesota skunking Colorado 30-0. And, you know, they lose Mo Ibrahim and they just plug in a guy named Potts and it just doesn't matter.
Right. They also had a guy named Marquise Irving go for 90 yards yesterday running the football. I had not seen his name ever before.
That's such a great 1980s running back name.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this 441 total yards to 63. Colorado had -19 rushing yards yesterday. They had 31 yards in sacks that they lost out of 4 sacks. So you take that out, that's still 17 carries for 12 yards. And I don't really feel like Minnesota has that kind of defense. So
maybe Mel Tucker knew something.
Yeah.
I mean, this Colorado team like played A&M really tight last week.
They did. But one, they showed no offense outside that first drive in that game. You know, Minnesota actually held them to like 82 passing yards. They only had 89 passing yards last week. But two, use college football more than any sport we follow. Emotion is so high. And the Buffaloes, especially on defense, just played so, I hate to use the word emotional again, but they just were on such an emotional peak last week and they were gutted at the end. I wasn't surprised that a Big Ten power rush football team like Minnesota could control the first half, thinking Colorado would be flat-footed. I was really stunned that they had no answer after that, though, because, you know, Minnesota, I mean, I think they can contend in the West, but I don't think they're really top tier of the league.
No, but I think that Minnesota were underrating them because their team fell apart so badly last year, but their offensive line is legit, and their running game is able to function.
Do one thing, but they're able to do it.
Yeah.
And that says something. I just like the fact that Minnesota gave up 26 to Miami of Ohio last week, and then Colorado rolls in and they get 63 yards of offense.
Maybe we're underrating the MAC, everybody.
Like, this is like an auto Rutger. They got a shutout auto Rutger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they had fewer rushing yards than they had points, and they had zero points.
They had 0 points.
All right. All the rest of the news for the conference this week is bad.
I like the sound of that.
Rutgers, our upcoming opponent, Rutgers, was able to take out a team playing with maize and blue winged helmets.
That's not good news. That's just what happens when Rutgers plays Delaware or Kent State plays Iowa.
Halfway to bowl eligibility, Rutgers.
Et cetera. We'll go with Oklahoma 23, Nebraska 16, because this was much closer than everybody thought it was going to be. Nebraska scores a touchdown, and everybody's like, ooh, is something going to happen here? And they get the extra point blocked.
Mm-hmm. And returned.
And returned. Which is like, incredibly deflating, but you know, yeah. Taylor Martinez actually puts up numbers in this game.
Yeah, like, he hits
a number of deep shots to a number of different receivers, and they actually hold Spencer Rattler down fairly well. Like, the offensive output here is extremely un-Oklahoma. They score 23 points. They were favored by 22.5.
Ooh, is that a Las Vegas Rutgers?
I don't know exactly what we're going to call that.
I mean, the surprise was Nebraska's defense, because Oklahoma giving up points is not surprising anybody. But Nebraska being able to hold Rattler down was not expected at all.
I mean, Rattler, he's not on the same level as the recent Oklahoma quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. He's just up and down.
You know, he made some plays that reminded you of recent Oklahoma quarterbacks.
Yeah, he does, but like, he also does some stuff where it's just like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
It was also a very short game. You know, I mean, there were only 9 possessions on each side, and one of Oklahoma's possessions started at their own 10-yard line with like 30 seconds to go in the first half. So the Sooners only really had 8 possessions in this game. Yeah. I think that's one reason why you didn't see their traditional output. You know, on one hand, you could say, oh, hey, Nebraska shortened the game. They had a, you know, 6-minute drive to open up the game, and they had 2 long drives in the third quarter. So Oklahoma only had 1 possession in the third quarter, really. But Oklahoma's drives were super long, too. I mean, they were just sort of like kicking their way down the field. So kind of both teams contributed to that. Nebraska's first drive of the game took 6 minutes and 58 seconds, and Oklahoma's first drive of the game took 6 minutes and 41 seconds. That's the first quarter right there. And it's 7-3. All of a sudden, you know, Nebraska's like, hey, we're in this, I guess. So, I mean, a lot of it had to do with that, because other than Adrian Martinez, I didn't really see anything offensively out of Nebraska that sort of was like, ooh, that's an improvement, or that they can, you know, do that.
He would,
and they still could.
He would break a tackle in the backfield, and then he would have, like, you know, an extra 2.5 seconds or 3 seconds to get the ball to somebody. And I think that is actually kind of common with Oklahoma. Like, I've watched a bunch of Oklahoma games otherwise, and, like, their defense is, like, let's get after the quarterback, and if we can't get him, then they're going to give up a big pass. The Nebraska's defense might have just been the right kind of defense to take on Oklahoma. They have very fast outside linebackers, like the exact opposite of Michigan. They don't have defensive ends out there. They have safeties playing outside linebacker. And like, when you're going against the Rattler offense, and Eric Gray is their main running back, where he's just, you know, a mighty mite. So, I mean, maybe this was just the right defense to kind of force Oklahoma to just turn it out. And I agree with you. Like, they shortened the game, and that's what you need to do. So, congratulations, Nebraska. That's a win.
Well, and now we got Michigan State at Nebraska in prime time next week. And I still don't, you know, I said some good things about MSU, but I mean, I still think there's tons of question marks there as well. And who knows what's going to happen in this game.
All right, Notre Dame 27, Purdue 13. Purdue loses its starting quarterback about halfway through this game, but is able to stick in it because George Karlaftis, sorry guys, is rampant. Like, every dropback, he is in the Notre Dame quarterback's face. I mean, people are touting him as a first-round pick, and he certainly looked like it in this game.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that was no surprise. The Irish had given up 10 sacks during the first 2 games of the year.
Yeah,
and they were also down a tackle, or at least shuffling their tackles. So I kind of figured Karlaftis would eat some lunch.
Yeah, and they get like a 39-yard touchdown from their running back on a throw on 4th-and-3. Yeah. He manages to pop out for another long touchdown. And so their offense, you know, they move the ball a little bit, but Cohn completed just half of his passes. And rotating in sort of a wildcat type quarterback behind him a little bit too, which was odd. I think he gets sacked like 4 or 5 times. So Notre Dame has a lot of problems in this game, and they managed to get big plays that gets them some distance from Purdue. And then Purdue really just doesn't have much other than Bell right now.
Like,
they don't have a ground game. Their quarterback left, as I already mentioned, and they have a couple of really talented receivers, but you know, that whole, like, Jeff Brohm wizardry stuff just kind of seems like it's petered out into just another Purdue offense.
It's sad, but, like, he's lost the guys that he made that happen with. He had a great tight end, and he had, like, running backs or slot receivers who could just, you did not want to leave those guys in one-on-one, right? And those are the kind of guys who could run around an Ohio State outside linebacker. Mm-hmm. And, like, without those guys, he's still got the tricks. Like, when you watch a Purdue game, you're like, oh, that Brown, that's an interesting idea. But, like, they just don't have the down-to-down ability to hold on to the ball and create those opportunities for themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, they also were without Xander Horvath. They've always been able to churn out some semblance of a rushing game with Horvath, but I think he's going to be out for the rest of the year. He broke his leg. They say 4 to 8 weeks, but yeah. So there was just enough of a drop off there too. So yeah, some of the guys that he's had that's kind of gotten the offense going the last several years, they just kind of one by one trickled away. And Bell himself got tagged pretty hard late in the game and had to be carted off. So he was up walking, thankfully, but, like, you know, you could be looking at some concussion time there. So, like, this could kind of fall apart in the wrong direction on offense fast.
Yep. Cincinnati.
One thing I want, can I say one quick thing about Purdue? I learned yesterday and that Ron English is their defensive coordinator. I did not realize that until yesterday.
Well, it was Bob Diaco before, so that sounds like an upgrade.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. But where we're getting into the Indiana game, I am looking forward to the Ron English versus Nick Sheridan chess match in the Milwaukee game. So that'll be thrilling.
All right. Cincinnati 38, Indiana 24 in a game Indiana jumps out to a 14-point lead in and, you know, leads into the second half at 21-17 before actually, they had a lead right at the end of the third quarter, and then they just kind of peter out, and, you know, you watch this game, and it's clear that Michael Penix is no longer...
He's been Devin Gardnered.
Yes, yeah exactly. So he completes 17 of 40 passes, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and that really exciting young quarterback who everybody was looking at 3 years ago just doesn't look like the same guy.
No, not at all. You know, and I thought Indiana played pretty well yesterday, and he was clearly their weak link. And, you know, if we were talking a year ago at this time, you know, we're saying that he's the one who's taking them to their greatest heights. So, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't look like his college career is going to be what we expected. I kind of thought that they should have gone to Tuttle at some point in the second half. I mean, guys, he threw an interception in the end zone without looking. I mean, I feel like you need to sit at least a possession if you do that. But you know, I'm a cranky fan.
I mean, you got to roll with this team. I mean, he's the guy. And, yeah. I mean, if that happened to him and that happens to the team, that's the story. But, like, you got to roll with your dude.
There's also a pretty controversial...
True, but Tuttle played pretty well last year, though, in his stead. So, but I hear what you're saying. And I definitely admit that, you know, he should sit for a possession is definitely me being a cranky alum fan, but more than anything else.
There's also a big turning point in this game when Micah McFadden got ejected for a questionable targeting call.
Yes.
Which I think gave Cincinnati a first down instead of them having to punt and go down and score on that drive. And McFadden's a big part of that defense.
He is the defense. Like they leave him against, you know, multiple gaps and have him race things down.
Yeah. Taiwan Mullen might be the most talented player on the defense, but Micah McFadden is the heart and soul and actually the whole center of it. So yeah, that was a huge loss. And Cincinnati's offense until then had done nothing but 3 and outs. And then they actually had a turnover that Micah McFadden was a big part of. So, and then when he went out, all of a sudden Ritter picked it up and it just became a shootout actually after that. To a certain point.
Does anyone want to talk about Northwestern Duke, or can we just not do that?
I did not watch. That was the one I planned on watching, and then Duke got up early, and I was like, I'm not going to bother, and I guess Northwestern had a fiery comeback.
Well, they played 3 different quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Hunter Johnson, 6 of 16. Yeah. 75 yards.
Almost like he wasn't good in the first place.
3 interceptions. What are we doing here with this guy?
Well, Ryan Helinski is not the solution, and that's who we thought it was going to be in the offseason, right? Mm. So, and then they brought out Andrew Marty. I don't know who that is at all. Like I said, I didn't watch anything but the first quarter because I thought it was going to be a Duke blowout, and I had other things.
He had twice as many passing yards in the same amount of attempts as Hunter Johnson did.
All right.
So as far as I'm concerned, that's another quarterback that should probably be benched, Hunter Johnson, and just go with, is it Andrew Marty or Marty Andrew? Fitz should figure that out and make him the quarterback and then see how the rest of the season goes.
We had a conference game this week, technically. It was Maryland versus Illinois.
That's right.
That was on Friday, so everybody forgot about it.
Yeah.
Maryland 20, Illinois 17, and a performance that won't make anybody happy, probably.
No. Illinois scored on their own fumble. They also tried to pass to their center on the last drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That last drive, I mean, Brandon Peters took a sack for a minus 11, then he took another sack for minus 17, and then, yeah, he took the intentional grounding by throwing it to a lineman who caught the ball.
Who caught it and ran.
He
was like,
yeah, and ran.
Well, I was not expecting to get the ball, but once he had it, he was just like, well here's my time to shine.
Yeah. Where were the CFL SEC refs when you needed them there, right?
I don't think that's legal in the CFL either.
No, I don't know. Yeah. And then to compound it, their great punter, Blake Kay, is one of the best in the league, best in the country. You know, probably has one of his worst punts that he's going to have of the season. I mean, they can't even get Maryland pushed back into their own territory. So they start on the plus side of the field. One big play to Rakeem Jarrett and game-winning field goal, basically. Maryland did not look good. And I say that despite the fact that Taulua had some big passing numbers. But given what I saw from Illinois against Virginia.
Let's try that again. Tagovailoa?
Yeah.
Okay.
Talia.
Talia.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I was using his first name. Oh, okay. I probably botched that, though.
It's Talia Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
Tagovailoa.
I'm never going to get it right.
Just don't say it, then.
How about being?
I said Tua for years, and that worked out fine.
Yeah. But Illinois was so bad against Virginia. I was stunned that Maryland just didn't feast on them.
Yeah, they couldn't run the ball at all, which is probably pretty alarming.
They're out of running backs. They're down to Tayon Fleet Davis, who was like fourth string running back the entire time they had great running backs.
Well,
he's solid, but they were all about getting running backs in space, and then like as soon as you're done trying to chase down that track meet guy, you go after another guy. And he's a guy.
Yeah, we only have
I guess the positive for Maryland, you know, this is obvious, is that they won, though, because like the book on the Terps the last several years has been this great opening effort, and then by September they're losing games they shouldn't. So I mean, at least they found enough.
They did everything they needed to keep that streak going.
Yeah, I know,
in the end of
I'm
that
stretching.
Illinois you really just kind of you
I'm
know got them
there.
Over the hump.
I'm stretching there, but I do think that at a minimum this combo with Jarrett, with Rakeem Jarrett and Dumas, are going to probably win at least one game they shouldn't in the Big Ten. And they did last year when they just housed Penn State. So,
and we've got them between Penn State and Ohio State on the road.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
All right. There were only three games other than the Michigan game this week that were guarantee games that aren't of much interest. Iowa 30, Kent State 7, Rutgers 45, Delaware 13, and then Tulsa 20. Ohio State 41, and we might want to dwell on that 20 a little bit, because this was actually a relatively close game.
Yeah, it was 28-20, and then Tulsa had the ball late in the fourth. So it was
27-20.
27-20.
They scored with about 12 minutes to go in the game to bring it within a touchdown, and then Ohio State got a couple touchdowns to make the final margin look better, but the defense is still looking pretty iffy. I mean, they gave up 428 passing yards to Tulsa, which is a lot.
Tulsa had only been averaging 213 yards in the air through their first two games, so they basically doubled up their season average. And I just want to read these rankings out loud because I've never really seen these before. But Ohio State right now is 103rd nationally in yards per play allowed, 104th nationally in yards per rush allowed, and 89th nationally, despite yesterday's effort, yards per pass attempt. And I'm like, and I kind of thought those rankings were sort of what those rankings were there last week. And I kind of thought like, oh, hey, they've got Tulsa and Delaware and Rutgers. Those rankings are going to climb, and they stayed the same after one of these three games. So that is that's a red flag. And I don't know if you talked about it earlier, but they kind of sort of demoted Kerry Coombs. They moved Coombs up into the press box. Mm-hmm. He's technically still the defensive coordinator, but they have elevated Matt Barnes to the one who's making the calls, and he's on the field. I don't know how that's going to work out. You know,
I think Al Washington is actually a much bigger part of that defense. That was what one of my Ohio State guys friends was saying, that like Washington is basically been moved up to Coombs' position in the as far as coordinating.
So what's Coombs doing? Coombs is just hanging out in the press box. Stay as far away from the players on game days.
He's recruiting. He's out there recruiting.
They gave him the Paterno headset that isn't connected to anything.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bank on any of this. This isn't something that's going to keep happening 2 months from now, right? It's just these little blips that happen to Ohio State, and they fix it by the time we roll into town, and we're just I'm just not going
to
do it.
This is at least coming from somewhere, because the linebackers were supposed to be an issue going into the season. Like, that was the thing that Alabama attacked last year, and then they lost all their guys, and you know, they're starting a whole bunch of new dudes. They're still kind of moving people around there. And that's kind of where they're getting attacked, is that edge defense a lot. So maybe not. You know, maybe they'll lose to Michigan State or something this year.
They just don't.
Oh,
just
don't that'll make me feel better.
It's like one of those 1998 Buckeyes that are over.
They just have guys out there that just don't look like your typical, you know, Ohio State defensive players. They seem a step slow. Some of them don't have the best recruiting profiles. You know, I mean, you look at Eichenberg, Simon at linebacker, and Bryson Shaw at safety. You know, you're just like, oh, they kind of just look like regular Big Ten players. And I can't believe I'm saying that. But freshmen keep moving up this depth chart. You know, they've got a true freshman at cornerback, Denzel Burke, who might be the best player on their defense. JT Tuimoloa, it might be their best pass rusher as a freshman. So it's they're definitely going through some things. And not to point fingers, but their attendance yesterday was apparently 76,540.
I mean, what was ours if we counted, really?
Yeah, if we
that's why. But still, I mean, you know, this
roomy.
Is like, that's why I said I didn't want to point fingers necessarily, but like,
and Ohio State right now, if they're not killing Big Ten opponents, there's really not a whole lot of reason to go.
Yeah,
but like,
I would think
they barely got to a sellout last week.
They bore their own fans as much as they bore everybody else.
Yeah. I feel that's the least accurate thing I've ever heard.
I mean, sure, they have the 80,000 people who are going to be insane and go anyway, but like, I don't know. The thing about Ohio State is they're still going to have Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson to throw to. And, you know, even when Stroud doesn't look like he's got it, you know, that's just a cheat code. And Trevion Henderson is, you know, another one of those dudes, and you can hand the ball to him, he's going to make something happen. And their offensive line, you know, is excellent, especially at pass protection. So, you know,
and there's also been several other wide receiver weapons developing after Olave.
And the job.
So they are stacked.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's focus on the other side of the ball for now.
yes. All right. 103rd in yards per play allowed. I just wanted to repeat that.
After a game with Tulsa in which they gave 500 yards of offense.
Yeah.
So,
and you know what? Tulsa actually kind of ticked me off. They settled for a field goal on 4th-and-1 at Ohio State's 2, and then they kicked another short field goal. You know, they weren't on the doorstep like they were the first time, but
it was like on the 12-yard line, though. It was definitely like within range.
That was closer. Yeah, you're right. But yeah. I mean, just come on, please. Help me out. Play to win. What are you doing?
Yeah. All right, Jamie, we'll talk to you next week. Good talking.
No problem, guys. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher along with Brian Cook. And if you are an underdog team on 4th-and-1, go for it!
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!